William and Mary have a war. King Charles II of England and his brother successor, James II, had a sister, Mary, who had married the Dutch Prince of Orange. This marriage created a family tie between the royal houses of Britain and Holland. This tie was further strengthened by the marriage of James II's daughter, Mary II, to the son of the Prince of Orange, William III. Royal marriages in those times were not only matters of breeding, they were also designed to secure political advantages and were often arranged with all of the sophistication and cunning of an espionage coup. Several German royal families were masters at the game. They were notorious for marrying into foreign royal families as a stepping stone to seizing power in those other nations. The House of Orange-Nassau was a member of that treacherous German clique. The Stuart family, after its hard-won struggle to regain the English throne, fell into the trap. Its marriages into the House of Orange helped bring the Stuart monarchy to a permanent end during the Glorious Revolution of 1688. To understand how this happened, and why all of this is important to us, let us briefly review the Glorious Revolution. A powerful group of Englishmen and Scots had formed a Protestant political faction in England known as the Whigs. The Whigs were actually headquartered in Holland, which, of course, was under the monarchy of the House of Orange. From their Dutch base, the Whigs launched the Glorious Revolution of 1688 and quickly unseated James II in a bloodless coup. The Whigs then placed James II's son-in-law, William III of Orange, on the British throne. The House of Orange now reigned over both Holland and England, as well as over their original German homeland. Behind this intrigue we see the shadow of the Brotherhood. William III is reported to have been a Freemason, when in fact, in 1688, a militant secret society was formed to support William III. It was called the Order of Orange after William III's family, and it patterned itself after Freemasonry. The Orange Order was anti-Catholic and its purpose was to ensure that Protestantism remained the dominant Christian religion of England. The Orange Order has survived the centuries and is today strongest in Ireland, where it has over 100,000 members. It is perhaps best known for its annual public parade to commemorate the successes of William III in England. Upon his assumption of the British throne, William III quickly undertook to erect the same institutions in England as those which had been established by his dynasty in Holland. A strong parliament with a weakened monarchy and a central bank operating on an inflatable paper currency. William and his queen, Mary II, are also promptly launched England into expensive wars against Catholic France. The man chosen to organize the English central bank under William III was a mysterious Scottish adventurer named William Paterson, of whom very little was apparently known. The British House of Commons, Parliament, was at first reluctant to accept Paterson's central bank scheme, but relented as the British national debt continued to skyrocket from the conflicts launched by the very warlike William III. The paper money system with its built-in inflation was touted as the way to finance the costly wars. Taxes were already as high as they could reasonably go, and so the House of Commons felt that it had no alternative but to institute the scheme. The Bank of England was thereby born, and warfare could continue, just as war could continue in Holland after the Bank of Amsterdam had been created there. The Bank of England has been labeled by some economists the mother of central banks. It became the model for all central banks which followed it, including the central banks of today. Under the Bank of England scheme, the central bank was to be the nation's primary bank, and it would lend exclusively to the national government. The central bank's entire purpose was to put the government into debt and to be the government's major creditor. The central bank's notes would be lent to the government, and those notes would then circulate as a national currency. This would cause the nation and its people to rely on those notes as money. The establishment of the Bank of England caused Britain to go deeply into debt to a monetary elite, the paper aristocracy, which could then influence the use of the nation's resources. This is the modus operandi of every central bank today. Like most modern central banks, the Bank of England was a privately owned or privately operated bank with quasi-governmental status. In accordance with Paterson's plan, the financiers who pooled their resources to create the Bank of England received approval from the government to issue gold and silver notes in a quantity many times exceeding the financiers' pooled holdings. The standard practice of bankers during that period was to issue notes 4 to 5 times in excess of their precious metals. The Bank of England, however, issued an incredible multiplication of 1,623. The British government agreed to borrow those notes and honor them as legal money for use in its purchases. The government accepted this plan because the government was not required to repay the initial loan, only the interest on the loan. Would not the Bank of England lose money on such a deal? Not at all. The face value of the loan notes were many times in excess of the value of the actual assets on which the notes were based. The interest on the loan in just 1 year surpassed the total value of the precious metals of the Bank of England. Specifically, the financiers had put together a total base of £72,000 of actual gold and silver. By issuing notes valued at 1,623 times the base, the bank was able to make a loan to England of £1,200,000 in paper money. The yearly interest rate was 813%, which equaled £100,000. This amounted to a profit of £28,000, or 39% in just 1 year. 22 years after the Bank of England was established, an identical bank was set up in France in 1716. The founder of the French version was John Law, who became the finance minister of France. Law has been dubbed the father of inflation for his efforts. This title is not accurate, of course, because the practice of inflation had begun earlier. However, the spectacular inflation which occurred in France after Law's central bank was nationalized gave Law the dubious honor of the title. As the son of a goldsmith turned banker, John Law was an interesting character in many ways. He was deeply devoted to the schools of brotherhood mysticism that were behind many of the important social changes occurring in his time. Biographer Hans Wantoch, writing in his book Magnificent Moneymakers, describes Law as one of the last of the alchemist mystics, of the astrologers who were dying out in the time of Voltaire. But in his pursuit of the stone of wisdom, he invented inflation. Another interesting fact is that Law was a Scotsman with an obscure background, just like his earlier counterpart in England, William Paterson. The Scottish link between Law and Paterson may be significant when we later review evidence that Scotland was an important center of secret, but far-reaching, brotherhood activity in Europe. Law had played upon France's justifiable paranoia of England in order to convince the French government to establish a central bank identical to that of Britain. The warfare which had earlier been instigated by William III was causing a serious strain on the French treasury. Law's proposal seemed an attractive solution, and so it was finally adopted. At first, the new French currency issued under Law's plan appeared to revitalize the French economy. This happened because the banknotes could be redeemed for coins in which the people had faith. After the Bank of France became nationalized, however, it issued a severe overabundance of notes, not just a careful and gradual increase. People quickly realized that there were far more paper notes in circulation than there were coins to back them up. The result was a shattering of popular confidence in the notes and a consequent upheaval of the French economy. The glorious revolution of 1688 not only gave us the Bank of England, which is still Great Britain's central bank today, it also gave us England's current royal family, the House of Windsor. The House of Windsor is directly descended from the royal family of German Hanover, which had intimate ties to the House of Orange and two other German principalities in the treacherous Mary and overthrow clique. In Germany, Hanover was spelled with two N's. In Britain, the spelling had only one N. I will use the British spelling Hanover when referring to the family in Britain, and the German spelling Hanover when specifically referring to the German state. After William III of Orange, England died, his sister Anne was seated on the British throne. By prior arrangement, upon Anne's death, the British throne was relinquished by the Orange family to the rulers of the German state of Hanover, who had also earlier married into the British Stuart family. Hanover's first elector, Prince Duke Ernest Augustus, 1629-1698, had married a granddaughter of England's King James I, as was true with the House of Orange. The Hanoverian nuptials to the Stuart family did not legally entitle any of the Hanoverians to sit on the British throne, but with the overthrow of James II by the Whigs and House of Orange, the rules were changed to suit the victors. The first Hanoverian king to take the British throne was George Lewis, who became George I of England. George I could not speak English, and he viewed England as a temporary possession. He continued to devote most of his attention and care to his German homeland. As generations of Hanoverians ascended to the British throne, they became permanently entrenched in British society. The Hanoverians provided England with all of its monarchs through 1901, and Hanoverian descendants from Queen Victoria's side have furnished the rest all the way up until today. During all of that time, the dynasty continued to maintain strong ties to other German noble families. During the first century and a half of Hanoverian rule in England, for example, the British Hanoverian kings married only the daughters of other German royal families. Not surprisingly, there was widespread opposition in England to the Hanoverians after they took over. Many Englishmen understandably felt that German monarchs had no business reigning over British subjects. Anti-Hanoverian factions arose seeking to put the Stuarts back on the throne of England. Because of this, the Hanoverians decided not to allow a large standing army of native Britons, fearing they might stage a coup. Instead, whenever England required a large number of troops, the Hanoverians used money from the British treasury to rent mercenaries from their German friends and from their own German principality of Hanover, all at a most handsome fee. The greatest number of mercenaries were provided by the royal family of Hesse, which had close and friendly ties to the German House of Hanover. A curious aspect of the mercenary arrangement is that some important members of those German families, especially from Hesse, later emerged as leaders of a new type of Freemasonry which had been created to topple the Hanoverians from the English throne. Before we study this remarkable situation, we should look to see what was happening with Freemasonry at that time. Major changes were unfolding that were about to make Freemasonry the single largest branch of the Brotherhood network. King Charles II of England and his brother successor, James II, had a sister, Mary, who had married the Dutch Prince of Orange. This marriage created a family tie between the royal houses of Britain and Holland. This tie was further strengthened by the marriage of James II's daughter, Mary II, to the son of the Prince of Orange, William III. Royal marriages in those times were not only matters of breeding, they were also designed to secure political advantages and were often arranged with all of the sophistication and cunning of an espionage coup. Several German royal families were masters at the game. They were notorious for marrying into foreign royal families as a stepping stone to seizing power in those other nations. The House of Orange-Nassau was a member of that treacherous German clique. The Stuart family, after its hard-won struggle to regain the English throne, fell into the trap. Its marriages into the House of Orange helped bring the Stuart monarchy to a permanent end during the Glorious Revolution of 1688. To understand how this happened, and why all of this is important to us, let us briefly review the Glorious Revolution. A powerful group of Englishmen and Scots had formed a Protestant political faction in England known as the Whigs. The Whigs were actually headquartered in Holland, which, of course, was under the monarchy of the House of Orange. From their Dutch base, the Whigs launched the Glorious Revolution of 1688 and quickly unseated James II in a bloodless coup. The Whigs then placed James II's son-in-law, William III of Orange, on the British throne. The House of Orange now reigned over both Holland and England, as well as over their original German homeland. Behind this intrigue we see the shadow of the Brotherhood. William III is reported to have been a Freemason, when in fact, in 1688, a militant secret society was formed to support William III. It was called the Order of Orange after William III's family, and it patterned itself after Freemasonry. The Orange Order was anti-Catholic and its purpose was to ensure that Protestantism remained the dominant Christian religion of England. The Orange Order has survived the centuries and is today strongest in Ireland, where it has over 100,000 members. It is perhaps best known for its annual public parade to commemorate the successes of William III in England. Upon his assumption of the British throne, William III quickly undertook to erect the same institutions in England as those which had been established by his dynasty in Holland. A strong parliament with a weakened monarchy and a central bank operating on an inflatable paper currency. William and his queen, Mary II, are also promptly launched England into expensive wars against Catholic France. The man chosen to organize the English central bank under William III was a mysterious Scottish adventurer named William Paterson, of whom very little was apparently known. The British House of Commons, Parliament, was at first reluctant to accept Paterson's central bank scheme, but relented as the British national debt continued to skyrocket from the conflicts launched by the very warlike William III. The paper money system with its built-in inflation was touted as the way to finance the costly wars. Taxes were already as high as they could reasonably go, and so the House of Commons felt that it had no alternative but to institute the scheme. The Bank of England was thereby born, and warfare could continue, just as war could continue in Holland after the Bank of Amsterdam had been created there. The Bank of England has been labeled by some economists the mother of central banks. It became the model for all central banks which followed it, including the central banks of today. Under the Bank of England scheme, the central bank was to be the nation's primary bank, and it would lend exclusively to the national government. The central bank's entire purpose was to put the government into debt and to be the government's major creditor. The central bank's notes would be lent to the government, and those notes would then circulate as a national currency. This would cause the nation and its people to rely on those notes as money. The establishment of the Bank of England caused Britain to go deeply into debt to a monetary elite, the paper aristocracy, which could then influence the use of the nation's resources. This is the modus operandi of every central bank today. Like most modern central banks, the Bank of England was a privately owned or privately operated bank with quasi-governmental status. In accordance with Paterson's plan, the financiers who pooled their resources to create the Bank of England received approval from the government to issue gold and silver notes in a quantity many times exceeding the financiers' pooled holdings. The standard practice of bankers during that period was to issue notes 4 to 5 times in excess of their precious metals. The Bank of England, however, issued an incredible multiplication of 1,623. The British government agreed to borrow those notes and honor them as legal money for use in its purchases. The government accepted this plan because the government was not required to repay the initial loan, only the interest on the loan. Would not the Bank of England lose money on such a deal? Not at all. The face value of the loan notes were many times in excess of the value of the actual assets on which the notes were based. The interest on the loan in just 1 year surpassed the total value of the precious metals of the Bank of England. Specifically, the financiers had put together a total base of 72,000 pounds of actual gold and silver. By issuing notes valued at 1,623 times the base, the bank was able to make a loan to England of 1,200,000 pounds in paper money. The yearly interest rate was 813%, which equaled 100,000 pounds. This amounted to a profit of 28,000 pounds, or 39% in just 1 year. 22 years after the Bank of England was established, an identical bank was set up in France in 1716. The founder of the French version was John Law, who became the finance minister of France. Law has been dubbed the father of inflation for his efforts. This title is not accurate, of course, because the practice of inflation had begun earlier. However, the spectacular inflation which occurred in France after Law's central bank was nationalized gave Law the dubious honor of the title. As the son of a goldsmith turned banker, John Law was an interesting character in many ways. He was deeply devoted to the schools of brotherhood mysticism that were behind many of the important social changes occurring in his time. Biographer Hans Wantoch, writing in his book Magnificent Money Makers, describes Law as one of the last of the alchemist mystics, of the astrologers who were dying out in the time of Voltaire. But in his pursuit of the stone of wisdom, he invented inflation. Another interesting fact is that Law was a Scotsman with an obscure background, just like his earlier counterpart in England, William Paterson. The Scottish link between Law and Paterson may be significant when we later review evidence that Scotland was an important center of secret, but far-reaching, brotherhood activity in Europe. Law had played upon France's justifiable paranoia of England in order to convince the French government to establish a central bank identical to that of Britain. The warfare which had earlier been instigated by William III was causing a serious drain on the French treasury. Law's proposal seemed an attractive solution, and so it was finally adopted. At first, the new French currency issued under Law's plan appeared to revitalize the French economy. This happened because the banknotes could be redeemed for coins in which the people had faith. After the Bank of France became nationalized, however, it issued a severe overabundance of notes, not just a careful and gradual increase. People quickly realized that there were far more paper notes in circulation than there were coins to back them up. The result was a shattering of popular confidence in the notes and a consequent upheaval of the French economy. The glorious revolution of 1688 not only gave us the Bank of England, which is still Great Britain's central bank today, it also gave us England's current royal family, the House of Windsor. The House of Windsor is directly descended from the royal family of German Hanover, which had intimate ties to the House of Orange and two other German principalities in the treacherous Mary and overthrow clique. In Germany, Hanover was spelled with two N's. In Britain, the spelling had only one N. I will use the British spelling Hanover when referring to the family in Britain, and the German spelling Hanover when specifically referring to the German state. After William III of Orange, England died, his sister Anne was seated on the British throne. By prior arrangement, upon Anne's death, the British throne was relinquished by the Orange family to the rulers of the German state of Hanover, who had also earlier married into the British Stuart family. Hanover's first elector, Prince Duke Ernest Augustus, 1629-1698, had married a granddaughter of England's King James I, as was true with the House of Orange. The Hanoverian nuptials to the Stuart family did not legally entitle any of the Hanoverians to sit on the British throne, but with the overthrow of James II by the Whigs in House of Orange, the rules were changed to suit the victors. The first Hanoverian king to take the British throne was George Lewis, who became George I of England. George I could not speak English and he viewed England as a temporary possession. He continued to devote most of his attention and care to his German homeland. As generations of Hanoverians ascended to the British throne, they became permanently entrenched in British society. The Hanoverians provided England with all of its monarchs through 1901, and Hanoverian descendants from Queen Victoria's side have furnished the rest all the way up until today. During all of that time, the dynasty continued to maintain strong ties to other German noble families. During the first century and a half of Hanoverian rule in England, for example, the British Hanoverian kings married only the daughters of other German royal families. Not surprisingly, there was widespread opposition in England to the Hanoverians after they took over. Many Englishmen understandably felt that German monarchs had no business reigning over British subjects. Anti-Hanoverian factions arose seeking to put the Stuarts back on the throne of England. Because of this, the Hanoverians decided not to allow a large standing army of native Britons, fearing they might stage a coup. Instead, whenever England required a large number of troops, the Hanoverians used money from the British treasury to rent mercenaries from their German friends and from their own German principality of Hanover, all at a most handsome fee. The greatest number of mercenaries were provided by the royal family of Hesse, which had close and friendly ties to the German House of Hanover. A curious aspect of the mercenary arrangement is that some important members of those German families, especially from Hesse, later emerged as leaders of a new type of Freemasonry which had been created to topple the Hanoverians from the English throne. Before we study this remarkable situation, we should look to see what was happening with Freemasonry at that time. Major changes were unfolding that were about to make Freemasonry the single largest branch of the Brotherhood network.